Blog Talk Radio.
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by Brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag.
The ring. Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this. Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this. Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America. But when did America ever bless God? You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You son of bitches, get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for power. You got that message, motherfucker?
Black power. Black power and more black power to my people. This is your brother, your soldier in arms, your comrade in battle, Sean Kwali. Happy to be able to broadcast live once again to you from the hails and the smells of North America. And as always, I count this a privilege, I count this a joy, and I count this an esteemed honor to be able to talk to you from this platform that we call and consider Black Power Radio. You know, the most hard-hitting, most revolutionary, most uncompromising, most militant radio broadcast to be found anywhere in the hells and smells of North America and really all over the world. We're thankful for you tuning in with us, and we have to give thanks and honor to that all-wise, almighty, true and living black God. That almighty, true, and living black God, the black God of our forefathers and our foremothers. We're thankful for another chance to make war with the enemy on an ideological front, a political front, and putting up that revolutionary fervor. We're thankful for all of those who have fought, those who have bled, took lives, and gave lives, that we may be able to survive today and walk in this sun and stand strong like warriors. We're thankful for every regiment of the Black Panther Party that has stood up and held the line. We're thankful for all of the freedom fighters that have come, both male and female, and we're definitely thankful for you in this hour. But in all that we give thanks for, we got to give thanks for a beautiful, bold, bald-headed black man in whom spirit we come in. We're talking about the Black Power General, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, and we got to give thanks for his big brother and national representative and number one student, a brother who we will hear from shortly in a few minutes, the national chairman of the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, the warrior, lawyer, doctor, and attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. Of course, we got a power-packed presentation for you, got a power-packed show, but got to let you know it's all about that August 13th. It's all about that August the 13th. Well, we're talking about millions into Harlem, New York, to stop the bombing, to take the hands up off of Africa, to take the economic stranglehold up off of Africa, to deal with some of the depression, deal with some of the issues that are happening in our mother country and are definitely affecting us here at home. August the 13th, we're talking about stopping it all. Stopping it all. And so the families coming home from every corner of the United Snakes of America, from the north to the south, to the east to the west, we're coming together to make our stand and to make our presence known in the hills of North America that we are more than slaves, that we are more than third-class citizens, that we are more than three-fifths of a human being. We are more than cattle and resource to build up the walls and the foundation of white supremacy, but that we are the mothers and fathers of civilization, and that we are the descendants of African slaves, and we want our place back in the sun, and we're claiming a place that can never be usurped from us. And so as you ride with us and listen to us on Black Power Radio, just understand that we are an extension of a larger movement. We are an extension of the Day of Action movement. We are an extension of the Black United Front movement. We are an extension of all progressive movements in the hells and smells of North America and elsewhere. And so we're happy to be able to hear from one of our comrades on Black Power Radio as well, Brother Ahmadi from the December 12th movement, who's going to bring the heat and bring the fire, as D12 always does. And so it's definitely power-packed. And so we expect to hear from our national chairman as he will light the spark. I don't want to get too heavy and hard into it, but he's going to take you all the way into it. But, dear family, just listen to this. Just know that as you hear my voice, as you hear me and know that I'm your brother, make it a point to be in Harlem, New York City, this coming Saturday. The keynote address will be delivered by the national representative, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. That's right. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan will give a keynote address there, but it's going to be so many of our nationalist family, so many of our Pan-Africanist family, so many of our Hebrew family, so many of our Muslim family, so many Christians, so many revolutionaries in the house, that if you're not there August the 13th, you're going to feel like you missed your birthday celebration. You're going to feel like you missed your wedding anniversary. You're going to feel like you've missed one of the most important events anywhere at any time in recent history, because that's what it is. An attack on Africa is an attack on you and I. When they attack your mother country, when they attack your mother home, when they attack your mother continent, they are attacking you. Any bomb on Libyan soil is a bomb on your home front. Any bomb in the Sudan is a bomb on your home front. Any bomb in Kemet or Egypt is a bomb on your home front. And so when your home front is attacked, and that which has given you life, and that which has birthed us into the world and made us the strongest people that has ever existed, when that is attacked and when that is threatened, it is your duty as a black man and a black woman, an African man or an African woman, it's your duty to stand up and take your place and hold your spear, hold your shield, and load your guns and load what you got in self-defense of your black nation and your people. And in the manhood training, we would have African rites of passage. We would have woman rites of passage, and they would have to face overwhelming odds at times. They would have to face animals in the jungles at times. They would have to do obstacles at times to prove and to show that they were worthy of their manhood, and that they were worthy of their womanhood, and that they were able to be a part of the nation and willing to be a part of the nation and be productive in the black nation. Well, our national chairman has given the call for every single member of the black family and African indigenous family to be a part of this movement and to be a part of this struggle and to be a part of this stand. And so now we have to prove now that we are able to be a part of this nation, that we're able to be a part of this movement, that we're not just bumps on a log, that we're not just people taking up space, that we're not here just to have a show or, you know, put on a front, but that we're here to be productive citizens in our black nation. And so now you have to stand up, and so your presence is requested. Your presence must be felt, and your presence is requested in Harlem, New York City, 125th Street, right there, Malcolm X Boulevard. And so we're asking the family, come see your brother. Come hear our national chairman live and in the flesh. Come hear the family, the December 12th movement, live and in the flesh. Come hear the revolutionaries and radicals that are there from the Nation of Islam, live and in the flesh. And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, live and in the flesh. Come hear your family and stand for those who have stood for you. And let those who are fighting right now, in some cases, in armed struggle and in armed situations and making and causing revolution on the mother continent, on the mother soil, let them know that we're not punks and we're not sissies and we're not cowards here in North America, but that we are strong and that we are ready and that we were born for this hour, and that we would not punk out, and we would not lay down, and we would not cower out in the face of opposition or the face of obstacles, but that we will meet and overcome every obstacle in our path, and that we will stand as it is written for us to stand, and we will do what it is written of us to do, and we will come back to our original senses and come back to ourselves and take our rightful places as the rulers, as the mothers and fathers of civilization, and no longer allow this savage, brute, buck wild beast to run crazy all over the planet Earth and claim in the name of God that they're doing righteous work and righteous deeds, and they're actually causing tyranny and terrorism all over 196,940,000 square miles of the planet Earth. And if you know that it's wrong, then it's your duty to stand up and dissent and to say something. It's your duty to go outside of your own comfort zone and your own walls of your own home and to make a difference in the land that you live in and representing the black nation. If you don't make a stand today, then what you see outside will soon be at your door. And that which you see outside will soon affect your family. It will affect your friends. It will affect your colleagues. It will affect those whom you love and whom you appreciate. It will affect everybody whom you know, because there's no way that evil and good can occupy the same place. If good is prevailing in the land, then good will be established and peace will be established. But if evil and wickedness and unrighteousness is not prevailing in the land, or it is prevailing in the land, and evil and wickedness and unrighteousness has taken the top flight of the steps and has taken its place in the world, then that is what will overtake the land. And so as it is written, it is said, corruption is in the land at account of the hands that man have wrought. Man have put in the world corruption. And so man and woman, the black man and the black woman, must now take corruption out of the land. We must begin now to stand up and go beyond the level of slaves. We must now go beyond the level of Willie Lynch. We must now go beyond the level of Sir John Hawkins. We must now go beyond the level of that which it was written for us to go beyond. And so let me see now if our national chairman is on the line with us, and he'll share a few words with us and light that fire before our comrade comes on from D12. Let me see if this is our national chairman. 240-432, Black Power. You're on live, Black Power Radio. Okay, we lost your call again. And so I say again, family, that we are expecting. Okay, you're back. Let's see now if this is the national chairman, Black Power.
Yes, sir. Am I on?
Yes, sir. You on. We lost you for a second. We got you now, sir. Black Power.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate your spirit and your enthusiasm and for rallying the call. Dear sisters and brothers in the radio listening audience, certainly tonight I won't be long, but I must be strong. There's so many duties that have to be done prior to this Saturday in Harlem, New York. We have here on, they should be in the host queue from a 718-398 number. We will have on some of our family and a sister who is a comrade of mine in the sponsoring organization for this Saturday, the December 12th movement. Am I still on? You know, I'll be asking.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All
right, you're loud and clear.
We're expecting Sister Amadi in the host queue, who will come on for an interview tonight from 8:25 until past the top of the hour. And then I'm going to be calling you when she comes on for her interview. I want Brother Mikhail from Jacksonville to come on and teach the remaining of the lecture, or until our host comes back to the line. And so we're going to have the December 12th movement on. That's what I'm saying. Well, who is the December 12th movement? They are the sponsoring organization for the Millions Harlem March this Saturday in Harlem, which is a Pan-African march, a Pan-African rally. And it is going to be very important and one of the strongest rallies or meetings that we have had in the black nation for a while. It is going to be a revival. It is going to be a gathering point, even a revolutionary pilgrimage for those that believe in Africa, for Africans at home and abroad, and those that believe in fighting uncompromising with uncompromising goals for our people. And so I've said it before, I don't have but a few minutes here, but I will say it again to the Nation of Islam. If you hear that your leader, Minister Louis Farrakhan, the elder to the black nation, but the leader of the Nation of Islam, if you hear that he would take to the streets of Harlem and that he would be out on the streets of Malcolm X Boulevard, where there are skyscrapers and certainly our history as we go back to the Million Youth March, us in the New Black Panther Party, the students of Khalid Abdul-Muhammad and the December 12th movement, you know automatically that you cannot trust the New York City police with the security of Minister Louis Farrakhan. You cannot trust the New York police certainly with the security of Malik Zulu Shabazz or any of the other revolutionary groups from the National Black United Front and from other organizations that will be there, an illustrious lineup. And so you would need to be there. I'm just saying this straight up to the FOI, anywhere under the sound of our voice, anywhere. If you're in England, you should be swimming to America right now so you can be on post. If you're in Africa right now, you should be out in the Atlantic Ocean swimming to get to America so you can be on post. If you're in Los Angeles and you ain't got a dime, you should be out there walking through Oklahoma, walking through Arkansas, saying, I will be there to make sure that nothing happens to our leader and to your leader in the Nation of Islam. If you're in the New Black Panther Party, knowing you haven't been asked to travel anywhere in a while, you should be out there grinding, making sure you're there. Not one of us in the Panther Party, the Nation of Islam, most true revolutionaries, should be found making excuses in this hour about what we could or would or maybe or might not do. Don't even start that, because I'm not accepting no excuses. My excuse department is closed. My excuse notebook is overfilled. There are no excuses for failure. We have to show some effort and to back this revival, back this Pan-African march, back this rally, which will raise our spirits and our hope. We have to do it. Well, why, Attorney Shabazz, why are you pushing this? Why do you have this as your Facebook profile picture? Why do you have it so that others in the Panther Party are now flying that profile picture and pushing this on the internet? This is not even a New Black Panther Party sponsored event. This is not your event, Attorney Shabazz. You're not going to be the keynote speaker. The keynote speaker here is the Honorable Louis Farrakhan. Why are you pushing this? Why do you have flyers and the Panthers making up flyers and pushing them in the streets? Why are you pushing this and it's not even your event? That's because, fool, I understand that the liberation struggle of our people is much, much bigger than me. And it's much, much bigger than us. And we do things not because it just benefits us or because we are in control. We participate and struggle with others in coalition based on principles. And we know that if it's good for our people, even if we don't have but 5 or 10 minutes on the rostrum that day, as we have instructions are to gather at 10 a.m. on Malcolm X Boulevard, on 10 a.m., even if we don't have but 5 or 10 minutes to get our message out, it is important that the event succeed. It is important that our comrades and our allies who in this movement, who we have been down dirty with in the past, and we know that they carry the kind of ideological line that will carry our people's minds into the future. We know how to get in where we fit in and to make sure that our brother and sister is successful, because we want for our brother and sister what we want for ourselves. even if you're mad at the Nation of Islam and mad at Louis Farrakhan, the others in the black nationalist movement, we can get past that. Don't let that boggle your brain and boggle your mind right now. Don't get caught up in the Dianetics and all that other stuff. Leave that alone. We can come back and deal with that when this is over with. Right now, at certain times, we need, and this is that certain time, that we need to come together as a family and show that we love each other despite our differences, despite some of our disagreements. And we're always going to have some disagreements with each other. Let's keep it clear. Everybody out there is not going to agree with the new Black Panther Party position on armed self-defense. Everybody's not going to agree with the new Black Panther Party's position on total separation from white folks. Everybody's not going to agree with our line. Everybody's not going to agree with the way we dress, we wear, or the way we go about it. But you need to stand with us and adhere to our advice based on principles, based on the fact that you know that we are your friends and some of the best friends you got, even if you don't agree with everything we're doing. And so we're calling for unity, calling for solidarity, calling for us to come together in the spirit of Pan-Africanism, calling for us to put our disagreements to the side for now, and we can come back and argue and debate later. Right now, we need to cover down. Cover down on our leadership. Cover down on our elders. Cover down on us. You know the white man don't like no new Black Panther Party, Nation of Islam, December 12th movement, and all these other black radicals coming together in Harlem when the white man has already planned and designed that he would destroy and take over Harlem and drive everything black out. Brothers and sisters, I know this from my personal experience. I've seen it and experienced it and lived through the trauma. The New York City Police Department don't play fair. You cannot trust the devil if you're a Muslim. How are you going to trust the devil? Some of you sit back there saying, well, they got the permit, so yeah, and so everything going to be all right. That means you trust the white man. Can the devil fool a Muslim? Sometimes these days, if you don't wake up, you have to be there yourself to put your eyes on this situation yourself. And even if you're not coming for security reasons, which you should come there for assurity reasons. So you can be assured that this movement that you are involved in has life. Because the tens of thousands, hopefully you're going to 100,000. God damn it, if it ain't a million, it'll look like a million. If you need to be assured that the movement you are part of has life in it, you need to be assured that the movement that you're involved in it is alive. And this will give you that assurity. This will give you that sense of revival. This will wake up your spirit and recharge your revolutionary battery. It will raise your level of your spirit and your soul, your ka and your ba. I'm talking about this Saturday in Harlem on Malcolm X Boulevard for this major Pan-African rally. And the keynote speaker will be the Honorable Louis Farrakhan. I will just be in the lineup. I will have them, my soldiers, we will have boxes and boxes of flyers. We're pushing the day of action, October 1st. We're pushing what we call it now the Tuba Tijani Express. The Tuba Tijani Express, as we're getting ready to send containers and tons and thousands of pounds of relief supplies to our comrades and contacts in Senegal. We got work to do. We got people to meet. We got networking to do. We got a major revolutionary meeting for the new Black Panther Party after this rally where we plot out our future and make sure that we are successful this year. So I will see you as I prepare to leave this radio and turn it back to the interview. I will see you all in New York City by any means necessary. You need to be there and must be there. There are no excuses for failure. A nationalist means national. Nationalists don't mean you're a Miami nationalist. You're an Alabama nationalist. You're a one city nationalist. And we're going to change and start calling you a localist. a black localist. The nation of America is 2,000 by 3,000 miles. Black nationalist means you can make your way around the nation. I wouldn't. I'm talking to the nation of Islam. Now, I couldn't believe it's the nation of Islam, not the city of Islam. It's the nation of Islam, not the city of Islam. You couldn't have paid me when I was damn near 30 years old, 26 years old. Tell me that Khalid Abdul Muhammad was going to be speaking anywhere where it was any risk involved, and I'd not be there. I'm going to be there on the bus. I'm going to be there walking. They tell me, well, I don't know nobody in New York. I can't. Damn it, you're a soldier. You get off the bus anywhere and make it. All you need is a backpack and the mindset that you're the God and the Goddess. Come on, black man and black woman. The New York police going to be there. Are you going to be there? The white man going to be there. Are you going to be there? So I went over all of that last week, which I'm not going to go back into this week, about getting yourself together, getting your act together, being holistic, being balanced, having your health together, your mind together, your family together, your job together, your finances together, so you can travel and be in a first class of revolutionaries. You want to be on what they call a triple A rating for revolutionary. You don't want to be a 1A revolutionary. You want to be triple A, 3-star, 4-star, 5-star, not 1-star. That means you have to be there. I could go on, dear sisters and brothers, but we need to see you Saturday at this rally. We need to see you in the Panther Party afterwards for a national meeting. If you think you got a role in this, and you ain't there Saturday, see you. Wouldn't want to be you. We will make some changes and politely kiss you goodbye or put you in another category. But the leadership of the new Black Panther Party will be in New York, and they will show that they can get up and make something out of nothing. And so, Brother Sean, are you ready?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm ready, Brother Chairman. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hello, are you ready? You there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Okay, now is Sister Ahmadi waiting?
Yes, sir. She's in queue. She's
okay,
ready.
You keep her waiting, and then I'm going to get off, and then I'm going to contact Mikhail, and I want him to come on to fill the gap when
right.
You finish with their interview at the top of the hour.
Okay.
And we keep on going with the program.
Yes, sir.
And so let me say this. I want you all to know who don't know the December 12 movement, and they will explain it, the origin of the name, where it comes from, the background in terms of the New York 8. But I can tell you this, that they were friends of Khalid Abdul Muhammad, and they were and are friends of mine. That we have been in the trenches together for a long time and have fought battles in big-time beasts. Like Giuliani and the New York administration and the police and others, we fought them down dirty together. They are our family. And they have fought for our people here in the United Nations and abroad in Africa. And they are to be trusted when it comes to the leadership in the Pan-African movement. So we are honored to be there with them and to put our service into support of what they are doing. We respect them. They respect us. So let me get off now and listen, and I'll bring you back to our host, the national spokesman of the new Black Panther Party, Minister Sean Kwali, and he will bring on the December 12th movement, and I will sit back and listen, and I will see you all Saturday. If you're a soldier, you're going to be there. If you're a revolutionary, you're going to be there. If you're a black Muslim and you say you're with Farrakhan, then you're going to be there with your leader. If you say you're with me and Khalid Muhammad, you're going to be there. If you say you're a Pan-Africanist, you got to be there. All time for faking is up. I turn you back in the hands of Sean Kwali.
Black Power. That's our national chairman, the national chairman, new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. And we thank him for his words. And you know what they're right and exact. Want to move right in now to the interview with our sister, Sister Ahmadi. And so we want to welcome you. For those who may not know about this sister or know about the movement, we want to introduce you and give you a thorough understanding of what December 12th represents and who the sister is. I want you to help me to bring to our radio broadcast where you are with the mighty Black Power and applause if you're around it. Pull your chair up and get close to your phones if you're by phone for our sister, Sister Almadi. Black Power, sister.
Black Power, how are you doing, brother?
Doing fine, queen. How you doing?
Very well. I'd like to thank you, and I'd like to thank Brother Malik Zuli Shabazz, who I've known for many years, and thank you for having us on the program and helping us to make this March on August 13th the best thing that's happened in the United States for a long time.
We're very honored. Wouldn't miss it for the world. You heard the national chairman say, if we wouldn't, we got to roll. We're going to be there. Sister Almadi, tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into the movement. How you got involved into the movement, what your roots are, what your background is.
Well, you know, I'm from New York. I was searching for a real consciousness and education, and I started to go to a lot of different forums around the city many years ago. And the December 12th movement really stood out as a real strong, militant organization that had a very thoroughgoing political education a program that wasn't about like one person taking the lead. It was about all of us doing what we can to learn and to struggle and fight for our people. So it was a sharing of information that I hadn't seen before in the movement. That's why I committed myself to work with the December 12th movement. We are a human rights organization that has been fighting for African people all around the world. And one of the significant things about the December 12th movement is that we took the ideas and the work of Malcolm X and really put it into practice. And that's why we have been in the United Nations fighting for our human rights for over 25 years. The leadership has been, I've not been in that long, but when I came in, immediately you're introduced into this realm of the United Nations and the international arena, and you're meeting different people from different countries and start to travel around. And I don't think that I would have gotten the kind of real thoroughgoing education in terms of how I've developed if I wasn't in the December 12th movement. I mean, just the fact that going to different places and struggling for people around the world and traveling all around the world, to Africa, to Cuba, to, you know, South America. It's just been a phenomenal life struggle for me, and this is something that I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
That's what I'm talking about, a committed revolutionary.
Right.
You touched on it, but just give us some information on what exactly is the December 12th movement. Why did you all choose the particular date of December 12th?
In 1987, there was a mass rally in New York City New York State against racism. And we were one of the principal organizers. At first it was called the December 12th Coalition because the date of this mass rally was on December 12th. And many, many different organizations came into that coalition. I mean, just broad range, even the NAACP, a lot of the churches, just a broad range of the Nation of Islam was in it. And so, but the significant thing about it is that it was at a point where things were on fire in New York City in terms of the police brutality, many different struggles in the street around racism. The correction officers were attacking brothers in jail. They were literally wearing Ku Klux Klan outfits and, you know, just torturing black men, black and Latino men in jails. And so there were calls coming from all around to our organization and other different organizations. And at that time, we were called the it was an organization against fascism. Like I wasn't in it, but it was. Yeah, I know that it was an organization against fascism, and so we all came together for that event. And those of us that are in the December 12th movement right now, who were the leadership in that organization, got the 5,000 people out of New York City to go upstate in buses to Orange County to deal with what was going on with that situation. So it was very significant in terms of galvanizing people from all over the state to come together. In New York, there's a lot of times people just think about New York City, but things are happening all around the state. And New York State is very large, and that was a very significant rally. So that's what happened, and that touched off a lot of different things that happened in the city, and things just started to grow and grow and grow. So, and so we've maintained, those people who maintain that line, that militancy, and that, you know, direct action against, you know, racism and human rights abuses, decided that after we stayed together for many years after that, rally, we said it's no, we can't keep calling ourselves this coalition. We are the December 12th movement, you know, and that's how we've maintained that line. And the work we do in the United Nations is under the December 12th Movement International Secretariat, and we are a non-governmental organization that has a consultative status in the ECOSOC division of the United Nations. So we have been involved in many of the different international gatherings, particularly the most significant one that we're proud of was the World Conference Against Racism in South Africa, in Durban, South Africa, that really put on the agenda racism on an international level. And in that, what came out of that was the transatlantic slave trade being called a crime against humanity, and that's in the records that it's a crime against humanity, and that those people who were victimized by that are due reparations. And that was a real fight. You wouldn't believe the fight, but the international unity that came around in that conference was phenomenal. African people from all over the world stood strong and fought against a real vicious enemy that tried everything that they could to destroy that conference, but we got that, and that was a victory for African people.
And that was in 2001?
2001, yes.
2001. You all brought, what, over, what, about 400-something people?
Yeah, we called it the Durban 400, and we brought 400 people from around the United States. And there were African people from all over the world there, you know, not only continent, but from South America, from the Caribbean, you know, and many other allies and, you know, from other countries, you know, India, you know, just all over, who felt that the Europeans and the United States has played a specific role in the oppression of peoples around the world. So, I mean, it was a conference that they didn't want to deal with. So they were throwing up all these non-issues like Israel. And not that Israel is not, like Zionism is not racism to the Palestinians, but the fact that they were saying that that conference was based on attacking Israel, but it wasn't. It was based on attacking all of those who have benefited from the oppression of people, the oppression of African people in particular, but people
exactly.
All around the world who have been oppressed by the West, by colonialism and economic oppression.
Exactly. They tried to sidebar you.
Yeah, you know, and the media will pick up all that, and they won't get the essence of stuff. So when we came back, we said we have to put our own stuff in the streets. So we had organized for the millions March for Millions Reparations March. That was in Washington, D.C. in 2002. When the Durban Conference happened in September of 2011, when we returned from the conference, like the next day or the day after was 9/11, you know, so it really put stuff off, like just threw stuff off in terms of us getting the word out. So the reparations conference happened a year after that because we wanted to get on the ground and running. But that whole thing was just the whole 9/11 issue we had to deal with, and we had to make an analysis of all that and what that was. And so that we lost a little time in getting the reparations thing off until the following year. Like 2002 was the reparations march in Washington. which was the first march ever on a national level for reparations.
Exactly, and I don't want to gloss over it. You like you said, you all succeeded in making our terror, the terrorism we faced, the slave trade, you got it labeled as a crime against humanity. What's been the response since that time of the UN, of the United States?
Well, you know, the United States has always made tried to downplay the World Conference Against Racism. We are now into the 10th anniversary of that conference, and the United States, even the New York City Council, has put out statements how we shouldn't even commemorate the World Conference. Like, every time they have these World Conferences, they'll have a 5-year review, a 10-year review to see if things that they wanted to have happen be put in place afterwards, and what's been the progress of those things that they said that needed to happen in terms of, like, reparations and, these mechanisms to really prosecute crimes against humanity, and that slavery was a crime against humanity, and just deal with those real critical issues. Every time a review comes up, they try to put it off. They didn't have one at 5 years. They had it at 8. Then they tried to say, well, we're not going to have it at 10 because we had it now. We said, no, you're going to have it at 10. You know, we have to fight every step of the way in terms of getting our issues on board. And also, this year is also the International Year of People of African Descent. So that's why we thought it was very, very significant that we fight for African people, particularly this year. We need to make a serious statement. And so we, with the aggression, the heinous aggression and the bombing of Libya, we could not stand by and just watch that happen and not say anything. As soon as that jumped off, we had to start organizing against that. And so we started to have forums and, you know, different analyses, and people came together and said, you know, we need to have a big, big demonstration. And, you know, when we say big demonstration, we always got to put the word millions on it, because the Nation of Islam made that the standard. So we have so you have to have millions march in Harlem, you know.
That's
so
right.
And believe it or not, you know, we can't underestimate our people in terms of their understanding of what's happening to us and making a connection to what's happening in Africa. Because a lot of people say, well, or would think that people would say, well, you know, well, I don't care nothing about Africa. I ain't got no job. You know, but people understand. We can never underestimate our people. They know that they're being attacked. They feel it every day. They know that Africa is being attacked. You know, they know race. They know what racism is, and they can put together the pieces. You know what I mean? So,
exactly.
The response has been overwhelming, and particularly by young people. Particularly
mm-hmm.
by young people, you know what I mean? And anytime you say the United States is doing something to somebody else, they know that the United States is wrong. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's just it's mm-hmm. they wrong because they doing me wrong. So I know they got to be wrong over there. So it's been a tremendous, tremendous response, and it's going to be a very, very successful march and rally, and we are going to be, it's going to be militant, it's going to be political, we're going to get education, we're going to get some fire in the street, you know what I mean? It's not going to be a prayer meeting, it's going to be the bear meeting, you know what I mean? we're going to be doing what we do, and we're going to try to agitate and organize people. So that's why we want everybody to come out, and all organizations can come and participate in this, and let's really make a statement for the 21st century for African people.
Yes, ma'am. Can you explain to us briefly the Millions for Reparations movement for those that want to support and get involved with it? I know that's the second wing, right, D12?
Well, you know, we have a lot of different campaigns going, and that's the very significant. The reparations wing of it is very, very important. We're still doing a lot of work in the United Nations, just fighting to keep that on the books and on the records. We have one of the most prominent international lawyers that has been in the United Nations dealing with the particularities of the United Nations for many, many years. His name is Roger Wareham, And he has taken the lead in organizing a lot of different forums and a lot of legal groups that are looking at how it is we can look at some of the UN mechanisms, but also we have folks on the ground that are taking these issues to the people. It was very, very prominent at one point because we had a lawsuit against some major corporations like J.P. Morgan Chase and some of the railroad companies and different insurance, Aetna insurance companies, and that went into court and got a lot of grounding in terms of people's knowledge and just the dialogue about race, about reparations. And that's what we really need, because we know that we can't use these mechanisms to free us, but we use it to get the information out so people can pay attention. Like this march on Saturday is not going to free us, but it's going to get us to talking to each other and thinking of different ways that we can work together to change our conditions. Because our motto in the December 12th movement is that no one person makes history. You know, like Obama is not going to make history for us. The people, the masses of people make history for us. And that's what people have to understand, that we can't keep looking for a messiah, quote, a messiah, but we have to understand that the real force behind pushing leadership into doing something is for us to be in the streets and us to be agitating and pushing them forward. And if we want different leaders out there who see themselves as our leaders, we have to push them. And if they're not doing what we want, then we have to push them out. You know, but they're not going to do nothing without a struggle. Like Frederick Douglass said, that power concedes nothing without a demand. That's not
That's
only
right.
for white people. That's for black leadership, too.
Mm-hmm.
We have to push them to do what we want them to do. You know, so that's one of the principal things that we want to come out of this rally, is that the people have to understand their own power, and we want to end the bombing in Libya, and we want to end the sanctions in Zimbabwe and change the quality of life right here in the United States, you know, because there's no democracy here, and they cannot go around the world saying regime change because there's no democracy here and there, we're going to take over and show you what democracy is, when we don't know what it is right here. You know, the democracy is when the people are in charge. You know what I mean? And we have a voice. And Libya has more democracy than the United States. And that's the same thing with the reparations and any other campaign that we do, that we have to educate the people and get them to push it forward.
Exactly, exactly. And to expound on that, what is the December 12th position right now, just for clarity, on the NATO bombings and the current course that the U.S. regime is on?
Yeah, it's a real terrorist organization. NATO is a terrorist organization. The United States government, as much as they try to finagle words and use semantics around what their role is in there, they're dropping bombs, and bombs kill. And they cannot go into a country talking about humanitarian efforts when they're using bombs. You know, they went in.
Exactly.
They went into Libya and they said that Gaddafi is threatening to kill his people. Gaddafi didn't kill anybody. You know, just for the record, but he's threatening to kill people, so we have to go save those people, you know. But when we look at what happened in the Middle East, so-called Middle East, because Libya is not in the Middle East, it's in Africa, you know.
Say
but
that.
When we see what happened in all these different nations, Egypt is in Africa, you know, so they want to change the map almost, like, you know, put the Mediterranean under North Africa. But
right.
When we saw all those upheavals in people in the street changing, you know, making these dramatic changes in these different countries, but then when you looked at what was happening in Libya, it was fundamentally different. You know what I mean? That these weren't people just demonstrating and coming out and voicing their opinions and huge rallies of humanity fighting for justice. This was a small group of people armed to the teeth shooting people, you know what I mean? Which is fundamentally different than what was happening in this so-called Arab Spring, you know. So you can tell that it was a CIA thing, you know what I mean? They were waiting for some way to get in to Libya. With this global economic crisis going on right now, they are scrambling for Africa because Africa has all of the resources. And if anybody who controls those resources controls the wealth of the world, and Libya has the most precious oil on the planet, it's like sweet oil. We call it sweet crude because it's so refined naturally that they don't even have to go through this rigorous process of refining it because it's so good just coming naturally out of the ground, you know. So they want that. They've seen the kind of thing that Colonel Gaddafi has done in Libya. He's transformed the desert into a farmland. You know what I mean? He's irrigated the desert, got the water from up under the ground and irrigated. I mean, that's like a miracle. You know what I mean? And that can be duplicated all over the world. You know what I mean? So that kind of – and he put that kind of money into – Libya development, and he put the satellite in the air so that all in space, so that all of Africa can use the satellite for their cell phones instead of going through Europe and paying these exorbitant fees to make a phone call. He said, we don't have to keep paying these Europeans this. We can put our own. So he put the lion's share of the money into putting that satellite up there, and he started the African Development Bank, you know, so they don't have to keep going to the IMF that goes and rips them off and takes their country, you know. I mean, just over and over and over, Colonel Gaddafi has taken care of his people. Healthcare, education, housing is all free in Libya. That's democracy. That's the sharing of the wealth. So, and the West don't like to see that happening. And so they're attacking African leaders that do that. Like in Zimbabwe, the President Mugabe took the land back from the European settlers and gave it back to the Zimbabwean people. Then all of a sudden he's a pariah and he's a madman, because he dared to set a precedent, and they don't want that in Africa. They don't want anybody taking anything back from Europe. That's why South Africa is in the midst of the same thing that's happening in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe is at another level because the government in South Africa is not involved, but the people are demanding the land back because the economy in South Africa is controlled by white people. So, you know, we have to see the self-determination that's happening. We have to support it. We have to fight for them. We have to look past all this propaganda that comes at us. And we can't spew it out like it's our ideas. They are putting these ideas in people's heads, you know.
Right. Taking it for our own.
Yeah.
And running with it. How did you, Susan, come to know Dr. Khalid Muhammad, and how did you all begin a working relationship in terms of December 12th?
Oh, you know, we go way back with Dr. Khalid, before the Million Youth March in 98. Dr. Khalid was very close to us. He's very close to Sister Viola Plummer. We come from the same Pan-Africanist point of view, and he would come into as a national spokesman for the Nation of Islam. Used to come to New York very often and, touch base with all of the organizations of like-minded individuals and come sit down and talk with folks. And we got to know him very well. And we loved him. Very strong brother, you know. And he was relentless in his nationalism and his black pride, you know what I mean? And he was a source of pride for many young people. One of the things that was very significant around Dr. Khalid, but whenever he came into New York, there was tons of young people that would come out to hear him, just like standing room only crowds, and were mesmerized by him because he had a style and a pride and a real, you know, rhythm and charisma that it was very, very good, you know, that really struck young people. So, and that's the kind of thing that you need to do with young people in terms of turning them on to something, and then they'll listen to what you're saying, you know what I mean? And he just had a way with just his presentation and stuff, and he would just go on, like, TV shows and, you know, just tell white people off, and, you know, that's always good, you know, when he does that.
That's right.
But he used to come here, you know, to our headquarters here at Sister's Place in New York, and just we'll be up to 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning just talking and strategizing and talking to politics and talking about what black people need and what we can do and how we can work together. And we came with the Million Youth March, and we wanted to do that, and we knew that we needed somebody, you know, to help that happen, and Khalid was the only person of that stature that could really galvanize people, you know what I mean? And we, you know, so we sat down and strategized that, and we made it happen. And it was the best part about the Million Youth March was not the fact that, you know, the people thought that the fact that Giuliani was attacking us almost on a daily basis, that, oh, he was so wrong, he was so wrong. But just like when Malcolm X, when they would put, you know, whenever the media or the civil rights movement, whenever the media, the mainstream media put you on something and they think that they're demonizing you and people see who you are and what you're doing, that makes more and more people come out. You know what I mean? When they talked about Malcolm, more and more people joined the Nation of Islam than, you know, white people thought that would scare people. But they said, whoa, those people are telling the truth. You know what I mean? And they went to the Nation of Islam in droves. And the same with Khalid, the same with the Million Youth March, that every time Giuliani did something to attack us, we used to walk down the street and they used to come, because they were always coming up to interview us and all kind of stuff. And black people would say, keep on doing it, keep on. They would watch it every day like a soap opera, you know, watching the news. So, it was just that intense, you know. So a lot of times when we think something is a negative for us, because we have our lives are opposite than what the media is, people understand what we're doing, you know. But with this march in particular, it is been significant that most of the galvanizing has been on the ground, digging in the dirt, you know, getting people, talking to people one-on-one, talking to different organizations. The mainstream media is trying to totally ignore this because we're dealing with Libya and we're dealing with you know, Zimbabwe, and we're dealing with Bloomberg here in New York and the racism here in the United States. So those kind of issues they don't want to put in their newspapers, but as we get closer and closer in the final days, now they want to get down, now they want to call and want interviews, and, you know, so it's you know, par for the course for them. Yeah.
Have you had any experience, any opposition in the same fashion that you experienced in 98, or is it different now?
The opposition is like a benign neglect kind of thing, but I think as we get closer and closer to it, it will get more intense, you know, in these final days. You know, we're starting to feel a lot of it now, you know. So I don't think Bloomberg is going to come out like that, like Giuliani did. But the fact that he's one of the people that's under attack by this demonstration, he's like trying to throw some pennies at some organization, try to build some kind of organization in the last couple of days to help black and Latino men, quote. You know, he'll throw a couple of million. He's a billionaire. He's throwing a couple of million and then taking city money and throwing it and saying, oh, okay, let's do a little program for them. You know, thinking that would put him in good grace with black people, but
right,
you know, we're not gonna fall for that one, you know.
Right.
But he's a different
exactly
kind of animal than Giuliani. Giuliani was just rabid, and he's different, you know.
but still the same, right? Different,
yeah.
But the same yeah. Same cloth. And so since we're right at the top of the hour, tell the people how we can help D12, how we can get involved, how we can learn more, contact yourself, or
yeah.
how what we can do.
Okay, well, you know, the first thing we want is everybody to come to Harlem on Saturday, August 13th. Of course, the keynote speaker is going to be Minister Louis Farrakhan. We're going to have Dr. Malefa Asante, Viola Plummer, and Father Miguel Escoto, who used to be the president of the UN General Assembly, and he has really been pushing for some real reform in the United Nations. And we want everybody to come out. Many, many more speakers will happen. It's an all-day-long event, and we're going to have many, many more. Dr. Chavez has stated that he will be speaking. You know, and we're not closed to anyone who has something to say to speak, but it's not going to be no games. You know, this is very, very serious. You know, it's a very serious time for us. We're in the middle of a recession, and the people who bear the brunt of these kind of economic crises are us, and we have to figure out what we're going to do. So that's what we're going to focus on. What are we going to do in terms of this? So please come, and you can call us at 347-737-3272. That's 347-737-3272. And you can go to the website at millionsmarchharlem.com.
Sister, we thank you so much. You brought it. We're gonna have to bring you back to Black Power Radio maybe right after the rally.
Yeah, that'd be
for
good.
For a follow up.
All right, thank you so
people
much.
People want to hear from you. Thank you too, Sister Amadi. Power to the people. Black power to you.
Black power. Bye bye.
Sister Almighty family, y'all can hear the fire. You can hear the heat. You can hear the heat. We've been telling you, make your way to Harlem, New York, August the 13th. And like I say, we'll bring the sister back and some other guests after the rally for the follow-up. It's about mobilization. And so right here at the top of the hour now, we want to bring on our brother who has been working hard. He's been working hard down in Jacksonville, Florida, building on the ground, making the connections, networking, going past religious boundaries, going past ideological boundaries, and even shedding a different and a positive light on the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, our movement. I want you all to help me to bring to Black Power Radio, some of you know him and some of you don't, our representative and leader down there in Jacksonville, Florida. He'll carry the rest of the broadcast until I return. This is our dear brother, Brother Mikhail Sharif. Black power, sir.
Power.
Yes, sir. And so at this, it's right in your hands. Go ahead. It's right in your hands, sir.
Yes, sir. Greetings to our black family, our Native Americans, our Hispanic family. It's an honor and pleasure and a privilege to come on Black Power Radio, giving all honor and praise to Almighty God, the one who has chosen the black man and woman to build the kingdom of God. And so my name is Brother Mikhail Sharif Muhammad, based out of the city of Jacksonville, Florida. I've been involved with the New Black Panther Party since the year 2005. I came through the struggle through the Nation of Islam and given all honor and praise to the most honorable Elijah Muhammad for being our example, our freedom fighter, educator, an example of what strong black men should be like. Thanking Allah for all the freedom fighters, the liberators, the sheroes and heroes, all those who have fought on the behalf of the black man and woman in the wilderness and hells of North America. I thank you all for this opportunity. My national leader, Dr. Malik Zul Shabazz, in the year 2005, gave me an opportunity to serve as the chairman of the New Black Panther Party in Jacksonville, Florida. And, you know, this is new territory for the New Black Panther Party and the Black Power Movement. Make no mistake about it, Florida is a very hard nut to crack. Our people down here are very complacent, very fearful, and they need strong black leadership. So I stepped up to get involved with the New Black Panther Party because I had the honor and privilege to be one Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, the most strongest freedom fighting, liberator, warrior that we have ever seen in this country, even throughout the world. And I had an opportunity to meet him on several occasions. And like many others, I was struck by his devotion, his commitment, and himself being a fearless black man. I had never experienced that on a personal level. I didn't think a man like that existed. And so meeting Dr. Khaled opened my eyes and taught me that not only should I be a spiritual man, but I have to be a revolutionary black man. And that you can't serve the people are you if you're afraid of the white man. And many of our people today wants to serve God, but they're afraid of the white man. And you cannot free yourself until you get rid of the fear. And that's one of our biggest problems as a people. So I've been here fighting on the behalf of black people, Hispanic people, Native Americans, and it has not been an easy task. I've been arrested. I've been falsely accused. I went through everything that other revolutionaries have experienced. But I knew when I came into the Black Panther Party, I knew that it was going to be a challenge. And I've never stepped backwards. I've only moved forward. And I thank Allah for Dr. Malik Zul Shabazz, our freedom fighter, our warrior, attorney, being a strong example that you can be a professional and still be part of the struggle. And we need more black men and women to step up, because now is our time as a people. Because the white man, everyone is aware of, all over America, he's cutting our people off. So while he's cutting us off, many of us are debating on whether the new Black Panther Party is the black KKK. The new Black Panther Party is a hate group. And so down south in the city of, I call it Jackville, because these crackers down south, they jack our people, they intimidate our people. So in this city, they say the Black Panther Party is not welcome. Malik Zul Shabazz is not welcome. Mikhail Muhammad is not welcome. And we need to go back to Africa, and we need to leave this city. But I'm here to tell you that the new Black Panther Party, up under the leadership of Malik Zul Shabazz, we're here to stay, and we are committed to the liberation and salvation process of black people. And so he gave me an opportunity to come on and speak to our people. I'm pretty well known in the state of Florida, and much so in Jacksonville, but I'm an unknown outside the state of Florida. In this city, we have fought many battles with the police, fighting for justice for our people, demanding answers to violent terrorist acts committed by police. And everyone is so fixated on the terrorism being committed by Arabs, which we know most of them are freedom fighters. And so anytime our people are being murdered, the police always step in and say they had a gun. They had a weapon. We were fearful for our lives. But we know as black people, all over the hills of North America, we have experienced this time and time again. And what is very disturbing is that as black men, we have many weapons. And we seem to be able to shoot down each other with impunity, have no concern. But when the white folks kill us, when the police kill us, we seem to always retreat back. We seem to always be able to throw our guns up under the car, in the river, in the ditch, behind the house. But when it comes to black on black, we don't even think twice. So I'm calling on black men today to stand up, clean up, man up, and defend and protect the black woman and the black family. We have no right even to call the name of God, whether it be Allah, Jehovah, Yahshua. We have no right until we learn how to be strong black men. So I come to you today and I say, some of you may not like my approach, but I'm not here to please everybody. I was called to duty in the year 2005 when I first started working on the behalf of the Black Panther Party. There was nobody standing with me but Almighty God. And I knew that I would be successful. And so we have put the Black Panther Party on the map in Jacksonville. We have done something that has never been done. Before I came up, there was no black men in the city willing to stand up and challenge the mayor, challenge the sheriff's department to expose the wickedness and the evil and the terroristic acts being committed against our people day in and day out. So we call it on black men. And whether you're a Muslim, whether you're a Hebrew Israelite, whether you're a black nationalist, whatever you are, whether you're Christian, it's time as black men that we must stand up today, because we get no respect for my enemies until we stand up. In this city, we're a small group, but we're respected. We're called on many times to stand up and fight for our people. But we can't fight for those who don't want to fight for themselves. So we're asking our people, with all the knowledge we're learning about the Black Revolutionary Movement, about the ancestors, all the history that we have developed in the hills of North America, it is time that we take that knowledge, that spirit, and stand up, because we have babies today. And our babies ain't pleased with us. Our babies are very dissatisfied with the status quo among Black people in America. When most of us today only want to integrate. We only want to hold hands with the white woman. We only want to hold hands with the Black man. Mean to tell me, with all the hell we catching as Black people, all we want to do is integrate. All we want to do is entertain one another. And so this white man today, he's losing his power all over the world. So with that being said, as a people, we need to unite. And so we believe that the December 12th movement, calling on the Millions March in Harlem, was the right thing to do. And we also believe that the Nation of Islam, the new Black Panther Party, the Black Power Movement, all organizations must unite. They must come together. We can no longer sit down and debate on who's right or who's wrong, because our children are incarcerated down here in Jacksonville. We have a historical case where a 12-year-old Hispanic boy who had a Black father and Hispanic mother, he was indicted for first-degree murder because he roughhoused his brother, and his brother died from being in a coma. And the state attorney, no good state attorney, Angela Corey. And it doesn't matter how many agents are listening tonight. I'm here to tell you, Mikhail Sharif Muhammad would never bow down. I would never bite back, because I know that this is our time as a people. But Angela Corey indicted a 12-year-old, and the silence from the Black community and Hispanic community was deafening. So as the new Black Panther Party local head, we stepped up and got involved, and we protested. We put pressure, and we're doing a petition drive to have the state attorney removed. So what did she do in response? She took him out of the adult jailhouse and put him back in juvenile, and now they're considering giving him back to the juvenile court. If only a small group is able to make this type of impact, just imagine what we can do as Black people and brown and the red when we all unite up under the banner of freedom and justice, because it is our time. And so I say to you, I have suffered much, but I'm a warrior. And no matter if my family turn against me, I'm going to continue to be committed. So back in June, I lost a niece, Khalil McCoy. She was picked up at a strip club and agreed to get involved with one guy, and three others jumped into a car. And she didn't want to have sex with all four, so they shot her in the head and dumped on the side of the road. So as a leader, it's my job to step up. But this was personal, so I became involved, and the organization did too. And right after, we did a vigil, and maybe the largest vigil in the history of the Black community in Jacksonville. Over 600 people turned out, only because the new Black Panther Party was personally involved and was my relative. Right after, the state attorney called my niece's mother in and asked her to denounce me, to reject me and condemn me, and say that the new Black Panther Party is a terrorist hate group. But anyone know our history knows that we speak strong and we stand strong. But because we are not a compromising group, we can't be bought out. We can't be pumped out. So my niece turned on me and rejected our assistance. And so I'm just getting back on the front lines again. Four young Black males were arrested, and they're being offered 3 to 5 years, but it was an intentional act of premeditation. And so there you have it, down in Florida. Florida may be the sunshine state, but there are many Black men and women that are locked up, that are cut off. As Black people, we don't even support our families when they go to the white man's jail cells. We cut them off because the enemy say there's no good in our children. In the year 2007, I was arrested because they were killing Black men in the city of Jacksonville, Florida, wholesale. They shot three in 1 week. And so the new Black Panther Party took the front lead. And so the police was upset because everything they were telling the public, I was able to contradict it and expose them as liars. So one morning they showed up at my job, 10 police officers, and said they had an old warrant they needed to take care of, a misdemeanor, which I had already served time probation in the year 2000. So why would you wait to 2007 to arrest me if I really had a warrant? I've left the country 4 or 5 times, and you know if you were the name Muhammad, they're going to check you out. Why would you allow me to leave Miami and go to Central America and come back and you never arrested me? But we know and believe it was politically motivated because they had to find a way to discredit my works, discredit the new Black Panther Party. In spite of all that, we have become successful. We're on the front line, and we will continue to work on behalf of our people because no one else is willing to stand up. And we must stand up today. We really don't have a choice today. As black men, we can't keep ducking and dodging and skipping and buck dancing for the white man because the white man really don't need us today. He can replace us with the Hispanic man who's willing to work for less. So as the chairman has said, as different leaders and organizations have said, it's time that we unite and pool our resources because nobody else is going to take care of the black nation like we should, and it's our time. So what is the purpose of knowledge if we're going to debate with one another? And that's all we're doing in the movement. We're debating and fighting with one another, and our children are looking. They're sitting on the sidelines saying, I don't want to get involved with that because all of them are arguing and debating. They're no different than we are. So I'm calling on the black man and woman in the state of Florida. It's time we stand up. It's time we man up. There's no other way to go. Your back is against the door, so you might as well stand up now because we got nothing else to do. They don't want us on the jobs. They're shutting down the schools in the black community. But if I'm not acquainted with history, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us that we should build our own schools and institutions. Not a white man don't have no money to fund the schools in the black community. What are we going to do? It's our responsibility to educate black children, but we want to put it in the hands of the white folks. And the white folks have already made a determination. All they're going to do is destroy their minds. They're going to give them psychotic drugs. And then when they become adults, white people say, hey, I don't have nothing to do with it now. Now we got another group of children self-destructing, self-hating, and killing themselves. I go all over Jacksonville in different areas of suburban neighborhoods. When you talk to our youth, you wouldn't even know they were black if you close your eyes. This is how disturbing it is for our people. You mean to tell me we fought in the black liberation struggle in the 1960s to get free and independent? All these organizations fought for the independence of black people, and today we still in the white man's chains. And we more in chains today than we were yesterday. So if our ancestors could turn over and see what we're doing, they would disown 95% of us. It is a tragedy indeed. So again, as black men, we have to man up today, brother. Hiding behind the church, hiding behind the mosque, hiding behind black theology, it won't get us free, brother. We're going to have to stand up today. We're going to have to unite today. We're going to have to pool our resources because our children are suffering. And that's why we don't get no respect. Down in Jacksonville, recently we met a group of young men that's interested in being part of the Black Power Movement. What do we have to do? Just come to the class. Do we have to be Muslim? Brother, we love all our people. It doesn't matter what label you carry yourself in. You're part of the black family. So I call on our people on August the 13th. We need to be in mass in New York City, in Harlem. I was privileged in the year of 1995 to go to Washington, D.C. I was touched by the Million Man March. And ever since then, I've been committed to being on the front line for the black nation in spite of opposition, in spite of illness, in spite of near death. I'm still fighting on the front line. And I thank Allah for putting the spirit in me. I thank Allah for all the freedom fighters, all the warriors who came before me who serve as example that I should never give up. I should never quit. And we have leaders like Minister Farrakhan, Malik Zul Shabazz, leaders in the December the 12th movement, different leaders, and we know that it is our time as a people. But we got to remove the fear, because fear is what holds and bites black people. It is the fear that keeps us from getting our freedom. It is fear that keeps us from getting our independence. So what must we do? The white man is not giving us freedom. He's already determined you're better off dead or you're better off locked up. So the other day, one of my family members told me that Michael Bloomberg was giving a little bit of trinkets away to the black community. I said, don't be deceived by that, sister. Don't be deceived by that. In the city of Jacksonville, we had a historic election. Alvin Brown was nominated and voted in as the first black mayor. And I went on Facebook and I made a comment that Alvin Brown is in the model and mold of a Barack Obama. And people got upset. They said, how could you say that about him? I said, I'm only speaking the truth, sister. The media called me, asked me what I comment. I told them I wouldn't have any comment. I said, just stick around and wait around for a year or two and you'll see the same evidence of an Obama. We'll get the same results again and again. How long, as black people, are we going to put our faith into the white man's tricknology political system? It has not worked. It would never work. We have over 3,000 black elected officials. You can't tell by the condition of the black community. If we would put our energy behind our own and unite, pool our resources, and develop security in our community, we wouldn't need the police department. You wouldn't see brothers getting killed in San Francisco, California. It was quite disturbing to see a young male shot down like a dog, and the police just stood with his foot on the back of the brother. And I always ask, brother, where all these guns at when we need them? What's the use of having a gun if you're only going to use it for New Year's Eve celebrations and July 4th and shoot up the black community? When it's time to defend and protect, we can't find you, brother. But you're a gangster. You're a killer. You're a thug. You're original G. But we can't find you when we need you. So what good is a weapon, brother? If you're not going to protect your own, why do we need the gun in the first place? So all over America, the white man is angry. So the police department today has become the skinheads, has become neo-Nazi, has become the KKK. So the police, there's a cover now to kill black folks. The other night I was witnessing London and the youth rioted in London because they killed another black man. But here, we're just comfortable with the iPod, the iPad. We're so locked into the cell phone, we can't think straight anymore. So the white man got us locked in as slaves by his, you know, technology. So he has to continue to cut us off as a people. We have all this education in America today, all these scholars, all these lawyers and doctors and engineers, and you can't see it in the black community. Everybody want to pack up and leave the hood. But now all of a sudden there's an exodus of black men and women coming back because now you can't afford $1,400 a month in mortgages. You can't afford it. You can't live in the gated communities with the white folks anymore. So now they're pushing you out. You can't afford it, so you got to come back in the hood now. And many of us can't fit in with their own people because they have been conditioned to hate self. So I go in many places and they ask me, why you got that name, Muhammad? Did you go to prison? I say, brother, only time I ever go to prison is to mentor other black men. This is the hatred we have for ourselves. How can we as a people ever expect to get respect when we don't even respect ourselves? The black woman today is more angry with the black man than she is with anybody. But when you go to prison, 80% of the population in the state of Florida is black, and you got no qualms. In the year 2007, there was a police shooting in Jacksonville. There was a young woman who dressed like a man, and the police chased her down, and they caught her. Well, when they caught up with her at a dead end, the police jumped out and started shooting. He didn't know it was a woman. He thought it was a man. When he shot her one time, she said, please don't shoot. I'm a female. And the police kept shooting. He shot her seven times. And so we went and did an investigation. And the mayor, no good mayor, no good sheriff. The sheriff said the reason why police are killing these children because they are crack babies. And the black leadership was super duper silent. And so I myself, as usual, I was the only voice crying out in the wilderness. And I said, the crack comes from the cracker man, the white man. I said, so, Chef Rutherford, you might want to rephrase those statements there. And the black leadership got upset with me because I struck back at the sheriff. So this is the type of leadership that I'm fighting down here in Florida. But I won't be deterred. I'll continue to fight, be motivated, educate our people. I'm never going to turn back. They've offered me good jobs in the city of Jacksonville. They've offered me position if you leave that old black stuff alone, leave that old Black Panther stuff alone. And I say, I'm not for sale because my people ain't free. In the year 2010, I was invited to the governor's mansion. I met with a no-good governor, Charlie Crisp, but he's more like Charlie Crust. And he told me if I want to be at the leadership table with the black leaders in Jacksonville in the state of Florida, I got to soften my tone. I got to stop my hateful and divisive rhetoric. And I told the governor in the governor's mansion, I said, I don't know anything about any rhetoric. What I believe I do, I speak the truth and I teach the truth. I said, I didn't come here for a photo op. I didn't come here to rub elbows. I came here to represent the millions in the state of Florida who can't sit down in the governor's mansion. He said, well, you'll be on the fringe looking from the outside to the end. I said, well, it'll be what it is. In the year 2011, I met with no good Tricky Rick Scott. And he said that my leadership has done more damage in the city of Jacksonville for race relations between black and white. I said, Rick, before I got here, the race relations was already bad. I'm just doing my part. He said, well, if you want to be part of the solution, I would advise you to tone down your divisive and hateful rhetoric. I said, well, if you feel that way, well, I know I'll continue to be on the outside looking in. And so this is what it's like for me and myself and I. Never in the annals of the history of the city of Jacksonville since the post-civil rights struggle have we had a strong black leader in this city. All of the black leaders, they can be bought out, they can be silenced, they can even be intimidated. So how can our youth ever look up to strong leadership? How can we ever be example for them to become free if we always cower down? If they're not trying to buy us out with money, they're giving us a white woman. If they're not trying to do that, they're giving us opportunity to sell drugs and corrupt and destroy black youth and black people. So this August the 13th is a historical moment for different groups and organizations to unite. The Million Man March, it was a beautiful moment, but we didn't keep the spirit going. So on this occasion, we should do the December the 12th example that we as a people can unite. And so I'm just overjoyed. I'm grateful. I'm thankful. And we'll be bringing a contingent of people from the state of Florida, from Miami, from Orlando, Tampa, and Jacksonville, and maybe many others. And we will be there on the front lines. And we will give our life for the freedom and liberation of black people. Because what is life if you're not giving it to help nobody else? And we're only in this movement to be seen, be heard, be known, but we're not getting free, then we have to go back and reevaluate why are we in these movements. Are we in the movement just to dress nice and wear nice suits and ties and wear all black? But when the time for us to work, many people disappear. When the time for us to stand up, many of us bail out. So we have to quit bailing out today. We have to quit punking it out. So down here, they say I speak too hard. They say I'm too difficult on the white folks. But the white man killing black people every day all through the state of Florida. They shot a brother 100 times. They've killed 7 young black males in the city of Miami area, metropolitan Miami area, and the black leadership in the state of Florida has been silent. So we as a new Black Panther Party plan to go to Miami in the coming days and announce to the black community and to the city of Miami that we are going to get involved. We are going to fight for justice. We are going to monitor the police, but we're calling on our people. Don't put the burden on one group. Don't put the burden on one leader. It's going to take a collective group effort for us to become free. White man ain't giving away his country without a fight, sweetheart. I got to tell you, you can't vote the white man out. You can't pray him out. It's going to take a little bit of everything. You're going to have to get dirty. You're going to have to stop spending your money with these crackers, with these Jews, with these so-called Arabs. You're going to have to stop patronizing Because as long as we give these folks our money, they'll never have any respect for us. On my block, there's an Arab, and there's on the other block, there's an Ethiopian. The Ethiopians always want to tell you what type of Islam you should practice. They say, brother, who you with? I say, brother, I'm with Allah. But what foundation you come from? I say, my foundation is the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Well, why are you a Black Panther? I say, because I'm not free, brother. Well, you shouldn't wear a gold ring. I say, brother, you're in no position to correct me. I say, brother, you have swine and crack pipes up under the counter, but you're a devout Muslim. I say, brother, you might want to step back and lead us from the loan. So we're getting ready to organize a boycott of these Arabs and Africans who don't treat our people with any respect. Behind the bite, they land up and freaking and deacon with the black woman. So black man, again, it's time to stand up. It's time to man up. And black woman, it's time now to learn how to love yourself. Respect yourself. Don't sell your soul for a few trinkets. Don't sell your soul for white man's crack, because it won't give you no pleasure at night. It'll just be a little simple high, and you'll be back to more pain and suffering. But as we leave today, we ask our people, it's time now. Many of us have died. Many of us have tried. It's time now that we collectively come together. It's time for a revolutionary change in North America and throughout the world, wherever black people are at. It's time for a change, a complete, constructive change. And we can't get it asking our enemies to give us freedom. The white man not going to solve your problem. It is not his job. If a man puts you in a hole, he's not going to help you out the hole. So it's our job. And we do have a blueprint. We have a blueprint for economic independence. We have a blueprint to secure and protect our neighborhood. We have a blueprint to build and develop true African-centered education. We have the blueprint. But the problem is we don't want to believe that it really works. We believe that our enemies are going to give us freedom. And so I'll be in New York City and Harlem. I've visited New York City never to stay very long. This will be my first opportunity to be in the movement in New York. New York is the Mecca for the black power movement, the black liberation. But it's time for New York to be reawakened. It's time for the black man and woman to be reawakened. We have fallen totally to sleep. Many of us today think we have arrived. Some of my best friends are white. They're only your best friend when you're in denial to your true black self. When you come into the knowledge of self, white folks got a problem with you. I will be the first to tell you, I was involved in an integrated relationship 20 years ago. When I came into the knowledge, white woman said, it's either me or that. I said, well, you take care, sweetie. I'm going back home to my own. And I've been on a quest for knowledge, a quest for justice, a quest for independence, freedom. I've seen many come and many go, but I've stood the test of time, and I'll continue to fight on the behalf of black people in the state of Florida and wherever I'm called on by a national chairman, wherever I'm called on by black people. I don't do this for money. I don't do it for fortune. I don't do it for fame. A lot of times when you stand up for our people and you expose this beast, a lot of times our people oppose you too. It's not an easy job, and I always tell my members, when you step into leadership, it's not going to always be sweet wine and red roses here. It's going to be some pain. But in order to get free, we got to deliver a little pain too. We can't just die for the struggle. We got to kill for the struggle. You know, we have to remember how the Europeans got America. They came here and tricked the Indians, then they started killing. When we going to start tricking the white man? When we going to play him along, strain him along? We're going to have to kill. But many of us want a bloodless transition. We want the white man to give over his kingdom. But when you study the annals of history, no one has never handed over the kingdom. So black man and woman, you have to fight. You're already a fighter. But you're fighting and killing your own self and time. The Arabs can mistreat us. They can kill us. The Caucasians can do it. And we even do it to ourselves, and we don't have no outcry. We might get mad for a moment, and then tomorrow I got to go punch the white man's clock. We won't even stop spending no money. So I'm asking our people to pay attention to Harlem. Be on your post. Man up. Woman up, black woman and black man. It's our time. The whole world is watching us. They're killing Africans all over Africa. I have a friend. Her family is upset because they went on Facebook the other day and said, your comments are too radical. Why do you feel that way about white people? Why do you feel that way about the Jews? I say, so you don't have no problem with them? No, I go to work every day. All we want is a job, a few dollars, so we can party, get high and drunk, come back to work the next day and do the same thing again. So the white man have every right to snatch the comfort zone from up under. And I'm telling you, President Obama cannot solve the white man's problems. He cannot serve two masters at one time. So Obama has sold his soul. But then again, how many more have us have sold our soul? And as long as we continue to bow down and lay down and cower down, our children are going to continue to disrespect. And sometimes I say our children have a right to rise up against us. All we want is a nice car, some diamond rings, a few rags that we don't even own. We won't even build any manufacturing plant. We got all these millionaires, some billionaires. All we want to do is, you know, imitate Oprah, imitate Wendy Williams. But Oprah and Wendy don't want to unite and open up some black businesses and buy some farmland in the black nation. Give us some housing, for affordable housing for those who are not able to afford the white man housing. But we want to worship these athletes and entertain us. So I'm calling our people today. It's time, black man and woman. It's time that we stand up, man up, clean up, and fight for our independence, because freedom ain't free. As we say down in Jacksonville, we have a banner. We say freedom or death. Freedom ain't free, black man and woman. It would never be free. It's a price to be paid. And the question is, how many in the black liberation struggle really want to give their life? We say it. But when we're required to do it, hey, man, I got something better to do, man. I'm finna go eat some pig foot. I'm finna eat some barbecue ribs, some barbecue pork. But when it's time to fight, we can't fight. There's always a small few willing to give their life, give their freedom. So I thank Allah. I thank Allah for Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, my revolutionary father. I thank Allah for my spiritual father, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I thank Allah for my political father, Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz. I thank Allah for all these sisters and brothers who are sacrificing, putting their freedom and their life on the line. As I told my friend down in Jacksonville, I say, do your daughter remember? Do she know the history? That there were Panthers and Street Brothers and freedom fighters that gave their life and forced the white man to concede something. She doesn't know it. So when she go into white man's corporate offices, she told me recently, she say, the Black Panthers and the Black Power Movement, all these groups are nothing but cops. I said, if it wasn't for these groups, you wouldn't be walking in the Tampa School District with your high and mighty self. But the white folks, right after that, they laid off, 25 years old, with a college degree. He's now on hold. So our people going to learn. We're going to learn as black people. The white man have no love for us. I mean, he can't use you. He don't have no use for you. He got a new nigga in town now, the brown man. And we got to teach them because they don't know any better. We should be teaching them and holding seminars. But what we doing, we're fighting over the little crumb. I can't even call it a crumb anymore. I can only say that's a speckle, because it ain't a crumb anymore. And we're being laid off. And God going to keep using this white man to put his foot in our backside. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us, he said, only time black folk makes progress when the white man put his foot in our rear end. And it shouldn't have to be like that. We have been warned, we have been preached and begged to. We had Elijah, we had Noble Drew Ali, we had the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, we had Malcolm, we had Martin Luther King. In the end, Martin Luther King realized the white man wasn't finna concede anything. We've had Minister Farrakhan, we've had Jesse, we got Dr. Collin, we got Dr. Malik, we got different groups that are teaching us, and we still don't get it. We get mad with the truth teller. As many of them approach me, brother, you can get farther ahead if you leave that black stuff alone. I say, brother, further ahead? Why do I need to get further ahead when my people are falling further back? And this is how some of us think. I have a degree from the university of so-and-so, and you go with 3 degrees. I have a brother in the movement. He have a friend. She has 3 degrees. She don't have any employment. So see how they have tricked us? They get us to go borrow all this money from the white man bank. Then you can't find no job. And one time when you find one, you got to pay up to the end of your life. This is how we've been tricked. But you have Asians come here. They work together as a family. Next thing you know, they own a corporation. Their children go to school, get a degree, and they advance the company. We can't do that. I want to work for IBM. I want to work for this company and get a pension. The white man got no money now in the bank. So you work 30 years and you're out the door. So we give all our talent, our skills, make the white man richer. And when I encounter white children, young white women, they are arrogant. And I say, honey, I don't want to hurt you today, but what you are sitting on, it was stolen. So don't act arrogant with me, because I know the history, sweetie. So I don't feel insecure with white folks. I know they robbed and stole and murdered. Many of us today don't want to see yesterday. We want to forget about the pain and struggle of the black liberation movement. But now we face with the same thing we were experiencing in the 50s and 60s and 70s. Nothing has changed. More things change, the more they remain the same. So black folks, all your education, all your associations with white folks ain't making nothing better for your children. Your children are crazy. They have lost their minds. They're full of anger, full of hate. When you ask them who they are, they can't give you one solid answer. They'll tell you, I'm African, I'm American, I'm European. I even had a black woman tell me one day, I'm European. And I just cried and cried. So we call it on our people. All right. We call it on our people. Stand up in America to be freedom fighters, to fight for the independence of our young people, to develop for ourselves. We have been taught very well. We just have not accepted the message. We have not put it into practice. So we call on our people to remember the sacrifices of their ancestors. You know, when Kwanzaa comes, you see many Negroes at Kwanzaa, but after Kwanzaa, they take off the African garb and go back to sleep. Yes, they do. That's what we do. We wear the Kwanzaa outfit for a couple of days and then go to work and say, I don't know nothing about that black African stuff. That's what we do. We want to play with this. We want to say, As-salamu alaykum. We want to say this and that. But then, when it's time to represent fully, we can't find you. I had a brother tell me one day in the white man's electric authority, brother, don't say that to me. Say hello. I said, well, brother, if you can't say it now, don't greet me later. So we play with this, the black movement. You know, we participated in the Martin Luther King parade, the new Black Panther Party. White folks got upset and said, how did they get opportunity to march? And Martin Luther King was a peaceful man. Yeah. So they love Martin, the early part of Martin, the latter stages of Martin. They have no clue about him. So this is what we're doing down here in Florida. We're laying a base to show our people that we can stand up, we can unite. Our movement is not a hate group. I love white folks enough to leave them the hell alone. I love the white woman when she with the white man. I got no qualms with that. I'm troubled when I see black men working 2 and 3 jobs taking care of the white man's woman. We are slaves today. Look at Tiger Woods, a fool, and he'll never have any more blessing. God took his gift away from him. And that's a serve notice to many other black men and women. When you sell out, when you go and integrate, you'll never be the same with this white woman. And so we have sold our souls today. And we mad with anybody that stand up. We brought Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz to Jacksonville back in February. That was a major outcry. Why should he be allowed to come to Jacksonville? These are crackers now, the same kind of crackers that niggas say white folks done changed. So they all on the internet angry. angry, calling on the police and the FBI, Homeland, investigate the new Black Panther Party. So you all, y'all play with this here. For many of us, our life and freedom on the line. So if you ain't serious about this, get out the damn way. Pass it on to the youth, because the youth got more courage. They just need guidance. So Dr. Malik came to Jacksonville, shook the city, and the white folks still angry. Then he came back in April for the first day of atonement, the first day of action and unity in the city of Jacksonville, and they got more angry. So my job became that much more difficult. But as I always say to the chairman, Doctor, I ain't backtracking. I ain't turning back. I done lived 48 years. I done been in a coma 3 months at the age of 13. My father was a registered member of the Nation of Islam. He fought the government and won, and right after, there was an attempt made on my life. So I've been fighting with this white man for a long time when I didn't even understand what I was fighting against. With all that said, I'm still standing, and I'm going to continue to stand for our people. And I'm asking black men and women today, stop being so consumed by the white man's paper chase, because that money getting ready to be laid on the side of the road very soon. So you killing and dying for the white man money ain't got no value today. When I went to Central America, the Hondurans were saying, you ain't got no other money? I said, well, I bring all this money to Central America, and you telling me you ain't got no power? That's to tell me that what I was taught back in the days was right in the zeitgeist. So it's time for us black people. It's time for us now to take our rightful stand. The whole world is watching us, but we're sitting on the side. I ain't going to get involved in that black stuff. Why Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz? He's an attorney. He makes good money. Why would he waste his time with all these niggers? That's some of the stuff I hear down south in Jacksonville. So I want to tell our people all over America, all over the world, that there's a fight going on in Florida too. Don't forget about Florida. Don't forget about Jacksonville. Don't forget about Miami. Jacksonville is more than just the Jaguars. I always call them Faguars. Because many of those brothers, they'll run 100 miles per hour through a brick wall to catch up with a football, but you can't get them to step 5 blocks in the hood, stand up for our people. You can't find them mentoring the black youth, but they're all over there in the white suburban neighborhoods, rubbing elbows with the little Beckys and little Misses and little Wendy's. So I had a sister ask me the other day, you don't work with white children? I said, why shall I, sister? White children got organizations and leaders that can help them. What about the little black children? In the year of 1997, there was a kidnapping from a local hospital in Jacksonville, Florida. A little black baby was kidnapped. 2-3 days later, a little white girl came up missing, 10 years old. Her neighbor kidnapped her, killed her, and then hit her up on the waterbed. One white person killing another white person. And the white folks went all around town, and Negroes putting signs on Negroes' houses and doors and apartments. And so they came to my property and said, could we put this picture up of the white girl? I said, no, ma'am, not on this property. She said, why not? I said, well, I'm concerned about Camille Mobley, the black baby. She said, we ain't worrying about her. And this is how it is for black folks. We care nothing about ourselves. And it sickens me to my heart. So anyone stand up for us, they got a problem. They talk. And when I got arrested, the police presented like it was domestic battery. But my wife spoke up for me at that time and cleared the story. And then they brought me in the courtroom, and the judge tried to make mockery. He said, Mikhail Sharif Muhammad or Michael is whatever his name is. I said, hold up, my name is Mikhail Sharif Muhammad. I appreciate it, sir. He said, excuse me. I said, sir, I don't play with my name. This is how God has put the strength in me. So I'm going to continue to be a fearless warrior and continue to fight and continue to educate black folks. I don't care nothing about these dumb, deaf, blind, silly Negroes crying day in and day out. Because if you can't stand the heat, get out the kitchen. So they go on the Internet and see what the Black Panther Party members are saying, what we're doing. I don't like them. the Black Panthers and the Tea Party has made America a divisive country. And I say, sister, where you come from? America was divided before we were even born. And if I die today, it's still going to have problems until we stand up, man up, clean up, and defend, protect, and provide for our own. I may not be the most brilliant orator, but my heart is in the right place. And some of us, we in different black movements, and all we want to do is debate and sound good. But I can't be Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz. I can't be Dr. Khaled. I can't be Minister Farrakhan. I can only be Mikhail Sharif Muhammad. I can only learn from them and use them as my example, as my motivation. When I was in a coma, the doctor told my mother and father, there's no hope for him. Why don't you take him off the life support machine? So for 3 months, I laid up in the bed. And my father, being a strong, devout Muslim, said, hey, we're going to wait as long as we can because we believe that he'll come back. So I serve as an example to many black youth that you can overcome all your obstacles, all your trials. But it's not something I go around and broadcast to the world. It's between me and the God that created me. And I thank Allah every day for being able to serve black people. I'm grieved. I'm hurt by condition, by division. I face more opposition among black people down here than I do with the white community. And I know the white man is still enemy number one. I want to make it clear to you. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us the white man is the devil. And I'll never reverse that position. I don't see white folks giving up their properties, their homes, their businesses. They don't even want to give you a job today. So when we say devil, Negroes get upset. When we say cracker, Negroes get upset. But the white man could disgrace you, black woman, call you the worst of the worst. You ain't got no problem with him, but you got a problem with us. So I experience it every day on the internet, in the community. But then on the flip side, the youth, they ready. They waiting on us. But many of us are ducking and dodging and skipping out of sight. Because if we stand up and say a word that inspire the youth, a word to defend them, they know the white folks going to put down the heat. You may go to work. I worked 3 years for Stanley Steemer when I first came in the Black Panther Party. I would do movements in the community, rallies, go to work. Next day I'm on the front page of the newspaper, crackers quiet. I went to the 10-year anniversary of the Million Moors Movement in 2005. When I got, right, crackers had the front page with me on it. Headline story. What are you doing in D.C., Mikhail? I say, look here, let me tell you something. I'm not your slave. I don't need your permission to go anywhere. I'm a free black man today. If you got any problem, you can talk to my attorney right now. No, we don't want that problem. One of the white boys took the sticker off the calendar and threw it on the table. I said, cracker, if this paper hit me, I'm going to get up here and whip your ass. Excuse my French, audience, but we got to be real. I say, I'm not that kind of black man. So they had a problem with me for 3 years. When I got arrested, it was their way to get me out the door. So I had to sue the company, and I won. People say, you can't defeat Stanley Steemer. I was victorious. They called me back 2 years later. Would you come back? We'll give you a position as supervisor. I don't want to work for you crackers. I don't want to work for the white man. I want to work for black folks. I'm asking our people to support the black liberation movement, and I'm asking the black leadership to be right in its sight. Don't use the people. Don't exploit the people for personal gain because you're playing with people who are suffering. I don't take from the people down here in Jacksonville. It's very difficult for me to ask for money. I'm a very humble person. I don't like hitting our people up for money. So Allah put me in a position where I can own a little bit and make my money and still be in the movement. Don't have to worry about where I'm going to sleep at. In the year 2007, I lost my job. I had to sleep in a storage unit. I never said nothing to anybody. I slept in a storage unit. I never gave up my commitment to black folks. I've been through much pain and suffering. I've had a collapsed lung for 6 months. The doctor said the average person would have died after a few weeks. And I continue to fight on the front line for black people. I'm not in this here for fortune and money and fame and glory. I know this is a hard road to take. A lot of times my own family don't want to acknowledge that we even family. When I speak out about the white folks, they're very silent. When I talk about black folks, hey, they cheerleading me on then. Because they have to go back to the white man job. In the year 2000, I was a member of the Nation of Islam. I spoke out about Israel's destruction of Palestinian people. And I said that the militants and the revolutionaries must unite and stand up and pool resources and buy weapons and defend and protect their people. I was silenced for saying that. And I wasn't speaking for any organization. I was speaking for me and the freedom fighters on the streets. People got upset and said, brother, don't you know you can die for that? I said, brother, many of us are already dead. So if I die, they'll have to kill me. I'm not going to voluntarily die. I'm going to fight for our people. As I came into the movement, I studied the history of our ancestors. And today I can say that many of us have betrayed our people, the present and the past. But we want to debate. We want to cheerlead so-called leaders that the white man has bought and paid for. I can tell you, I'm not one of them he can buy and he can pay for. They come in on me many times because they are angry and upset. We go before the city council, stand up like men and strong black women. White folks don't like it. Police don't like it. A lady asked me, what is it that you're taking, son? I need some of that medication. I said, you just got to get the fear out of your heart, black woman. She said, are you a Muslim? I said, no, I'm a freedom fighter. That's just a spiritual definition. I'm a Muslim, Christian, Hebrew, I'm all that and then some. We use too much emphasis on religion, and that keeps us fighting and bickering with one another. I love my Christian family. Could I tell you I'm happy with them? No, sir. I'm dismayed because many of the Christians want to put all the burden on Jesus. But Jesus say, stand up. He say, stand up and clean up. And God won't bring any change to the people today, bring it to themselves. So while we're sitting on the sideline waiting for something to fall out of the sky, the white man is robbing us day in, day out, on the ground. He's robbing us. I ain't going to give y'all Black Panthers no money. I ain't going to give Farrakhan no money. No, you don't have to give it to the cracker. Take your money. He don't even ask you permission for your tax money. And you got nothing to say. We go out here and ask for some donations to support the event, support the movement, support feeding the community. You got a lot of problems, but you don't have no problem when the cracker taking your money out your paycheck every week and every day. Financing Israel, an outlaw state. So-called Jews, which they're not the real Jews. So my friend, family is upset because I say they're not the real Jews. They're the Johnny come lately, and I would never backtrack from that. I told her, I don't bow to Negroes. I don't bow to white folks. Well, I'm going to capitulate to your family. Your family don't have no power. If you don't like what I say and do, don't go on the Internet and look up stories and don't read my comments. They don't like Dr. Malik. Because Dr. Malik willing to put his life on the line, his freedom on the line. What good is it you're going to be an attorney and you ain't doing no freedom work for the people? I'm Bernie so-and-so. I hear it all the time. I say, brother, well, where you work at outside the white man's courthouse, you just want a paycheck. When we need you to come in the community and teach us about how to deal with the white man law, we can't get you on board. You're just a little playboy attorney. You're not the real deal, but we got a real attorney, and we need many more. And I'm quite sure many more are coming up as they hear us speak.
That's right.
So I go to the school system, and I talk to our youth about education and self-development, and don't just go to white man college and get a degree and want to be an NFL football player so you can give all the money back to the white woman. So I thank you all. I thank you all for this opportunity. I hope that my words touch someone. I spoke from my heart because that's the only way I know how to do it. So I just say Black Power.
All right, Black Power. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We're right at the end of the hour.
Thank you, brother.
We want to thank you, Brother McHale, for your words, your strong words, your timely words, and
yes,
putting
sir.
It down the way that you put it down. Black power to you, sir.
Black power. Thank you, brother. Black power to the family and free the land and black laws for black people.
And straight like that. Dear family, that's Brother McHale Sharif. Brother McHale Sharif out of Jacksonville, Florida. You've been enjoying one of our strong leaders there in Jacksonville, Florida. And he's just an example of the type of leadership and the type of caliber of brother that is producing a new Black Panther Party. And with these last remaining seconds, I want to tell you all to make sure that you get with us this August the 13th. August the 13th. At Harlem, New York, 125th Street, as you heard our sister Ahmadi talk about what's going down on the streets right there, Malcolm X Boulevard, how we're rallying against Bloomberg and how we're putting it down for our people. Hands off Africa. Stop the bombing. Hands off of black people and African people in general. We're putting it down. And as we said earlier, we're not coming for no games. We're coming to bring the heat. We're coming to make a real war with the beast. And those that keep us in these conditions. We thank you all for tuning in to another edition of Black Power Radio, the strongest radio to be found anywhere in the hills and smells of North America and all across the globe. We ask that you join us again on this Wednesday. Join us again this Wednesday for another example, as we will have a full lineup this time of our national chairman, Dr. and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, who's going to be bringing it all home for you and making it plain for you, so that when by the time you see him on Saturday, you'll be able to put a face with the voice if you've never seen him before, and you'll understand more and more what this mission is about. You can get with us and contact us by email at nbpphq@yahoo.com. Don't forget, our next national day of action is October 1st. It's right around the corner. And so make sure you join us at dayofactionmovement.org. We're going to have plenty of websites for you. The new Black Panther Party newspaper is on the way out. Much more to come. Stay tuned, family. Remember, it's freedom or death. It's black power for black people. And if black people ain't free, nobody's going to be free. Black power.
Until the philosophy which hold one race superior and another inferior is finally